Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On Headstrong, we are very pleased and proud to be partnered with the CBD brand, The Good Level. Now, I've been taking CBD for about 18 months to maintain my mental well-being. But it's been very difficult to find a brand that I can trust because there's so many faceless foreign brands out there and you're not sure what you're buying or how it's sourced. Luckily, I found two guys, Joe and Johnny, who have created this wonderful brand called The Good Level. What's so great about these guys is that they support British farming. Many brands import their CBD from America, but The Good Level say they don't rely on the methods by farmers that they've never met nor the farms that they've never seen. They have a really close relationship with their farmers who are in Somerset, meaning they know how their product is produced from start to finish. They're the first CBD company I've found who put a face on the brand, and they're transparent with the whole process of how they create their products. And they've even got their own podcast where they look at the latest research on CBD. To check them out, go to their Instagram at the.good.level. And drop them a message if you want to find out more about CBD. And for 15% off their products, use HEADSTRONG15 on their website for checkout. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Headstrong. My name is Louis Strong and I host this podcast. Headstrong is a podcast where I sit down with a number of individuals in the public eye to talk to them about their lives and their careers and their experiences, to understand what the word headstrong means to them. And to me, it means to believe in yourself, to talk about your vulnerabilities and reinforce your self-worth. Now, on this episode of Headstrong, I am joined by Chloe Maderly. We discussed her life growing up with two massive TV parents, as well as a child craving so desperately that attention that she desired to be in the spotlight. We discussed her getting into TV. We also had a chat about Harry and Meghan, very delicately, of course, and we discussed her relationship with mental health. So I really hope you enjoy this episode of Headstrong. Chloe, thank you very much for joining me on Headstrong today. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm feeling good today because the sun is finally out after we had... How many weeks of rain did we have? Well, I think...
Four at least in a row.
It was awful and it really, really started to kind of... I just found it quite hard to get up in the morning when it's like really grey and it's raining. So when I woke up this morning and I could hear the birds and the sun was shining, I was like, oh my God, we're free. So yeah, I'm in a good mood.
So wait and hold that thought, because I'm starting this series off by asking everybody, I'm checking in with them. This is how I want to start this new series. So I want to check in with you, but I feel like you've stolen it there already. You're in a good place. Now the sun is out and we're ready to go.
Yeah, I feel like I don't necessarily always really notice it. It was something one of my clients said to me today. I don't really notice it, but until I feel really happy again, and then I can correlate it with the weather. Mm. But it's like being a woman as well, when you have your menstrual cycle, you don't realize, like, when you're 1 week kind of before you start, you don't realize that that's what it is always, or at least I don't, because I don't obsessively track my period at all. You don't realize, and suddenly you're like 3 days into wanting to kill everyone and you don't know why, and then you'll get another symptom and the penny will drop. And I feel like that with the weather sometimes. I definitely do, like, just get a bit down, and I don't really realize it until till I've already suffered through it for at least a few days.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much that I have kind of jotted down, written notes on, that I want to talk to you about. So I felt like the only way that I can best do this is in chronological order.
Yes, and I do that too.
It's easier for my simple brain.
100%.
So I'm going to kick off with you and your parents and growing up, and the iconic set of parents that you have, that you probably don't think is iconic because they're just your parents and they probably get on your nerves, but to the nation, they are iconic. And you were born into this media and entertainment industry. Did you always think that from very early on that was the pathway for you?
Yeah, I absolutely did think that I would go into TV, and I did. And that I should go into TV, because that was the world that I grew up in. That was the world outside of school. That was the only world that I knew. And it is fair to say as well that when I was really a teenager, all the way up into my early 20s, which is when it started to change, but I loved attention. I was definitely an attention whore. Like, and I got a real kick out of it. I got a real kick out of being on camera and being papped. And it was really shocking to me, actually, that when I finally did decide to, like, really kind of pursue a career in television, quite quickly did that reverse. And I found myself, even to this day now, I found myself shying further and further and further away from it. But it was so funny because I definitely doggedly pursued it initially, thinking it would be great for me. And it just, as it turned out, it really didn't suit my personality type.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you touched on education there, and I think that you went to both private school and college. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you've seen both sides of the kind of educational sphere.
Yeah.
How do they compare to each other when you reflect on it now? Obviously, I know that this is kind of a few years on from what we're experiencing now in the educational system, but how did they compare upon reflection now?
Really, freedom and taking responsibility for yourself. I think when I went to kind of school and did my GCSEs, I went to King Alfred's, which is great. It's a Steiner school, and it's it very much kind of promotes kind of social equality and yeah, like respect, social respect. And it's quite a different school. Like, you don't wear uniform, you call the teachers by their first name. You're very much on kind of, you know, close kind of, you're encouraged to have a close relationship, almost friendship, with your teachers. And I loved it. But college was definitely much more, it's on you. You know, you decide when you come, when you go, if you do the work, if you don't do the work. And it kind of, it was definitely kind of a learning curve in terms of growing up.
Where did you feel more comfortable then?
I really, really liked going to King Alfred's, which was my first school, if I'm honest. And it was when I went to university in Leeds, and I got a year into my degree. I was doing English literature and film, and I got a year into it, and I just suddenly realized that actually education and academia, and whenever I say this, people think I'm stupid, or maybe that's just how it comes across when it's written in print, because I know it's been written in print quite a few times. Academia just wasn't for me. I'm just not, that isn't kind of, well, at the time, funnily enough, I think I'd respond really well to it now. But at the time, I very much wanted to be working, earning a living, have, I don't know. I was ready, and academia just didn't suit me. And it's only, funnily enough, now that I do what I do, that, and which is so kind of entrenched in science, that I feel like I would actually really quite like to go back to university. But that being said, I still don't think I will, because yeah.
I think I do agree with you, because I think at that age, all people, what you should be learning at school is actually social skills and life skills that you need to possess and learn and get onto. I don't think that you're actually capable of doing kind of those forms of further education until you are kind of more mature, basically.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, like, otherwise you're just going to be, you're not there for the educational side of things if you're going to university, in my opinion, at 18 to 21. That's not what I was there anyway. I was there for the social life and having fun, right?
100%. I think there are definitely, my mom is an academic through and through. You know, she fell in love with William Shakespeare when she was 9 years old. I mean, the woman speaks three languages. She was meant to kind of attend university and really eventually do what she ended up doing, which was write books. You know, the shoe fit perfectly for her. Now, my dad, on the other hand, left school at 16 because he desperately wanted to be a roaming reporter. He wanted to be a journalist. He wanted to be on the ground, you know, writing stories, asking questions. And he ended up becoming the youngest editor of a local newspaper in the UK. And I think he still holds that record at the Brentwood Argus. He was a teenager. And it's really interesting. You know, I think I'm much more take after my dad than my mum. At the time I struggled with school. I really did. I think you're right. I think I was too naturally just immature for it. And I think now that I'm older, I just think it was such a wonderful opportunity that I had, which I just didn't appreciate at the time, being education.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now we've touched on your parents there, but what I want to know is, did you feel any kind of external pressure to follow in the same industry? Obviously, you say that it's all you ever did know outside of school, but was there kind of like external pressures of people kind of talking about it at you, and therefore you kind of felt obliged to follow in those footsteps?
No, you know what? If anything, it was the other way around. As soon as I decided that I wanted to work in TV, this is also at a time where people like Paris Hilton and there were lots of children of famous people kind of coming to the fore. I definitely felt like the second that I made the decision that I wanted to go into the TV, it was actually quite controversial and everyone was very negative about it. And the word nepotism was thrown at me a million and one times. And I think that that is absolutely fair. You know, it's fair to say that a lot of, you talk about dentists, doctors, lawyers, a lot of children follow in their parents' footsteps. And of course, you know, people in the industry, regardless of whatever industry it is. And of course it helps. And of course people know what your last name is. And I'm not saying it's right, but it is a fact. And it is fair that I had that word nepotism thrown at me. But I do think that what was unfair in hindsight was that I was actually working behind the scenes as a runner and then a junior researcher and then a senior researcher. I never quite made it to AP because I left before that happened. Mm-hmm. But I was doing that at the same time as I was working in front of the screen. Like, I effectively always had two separate jobs. Sorry. That's my dad. Funnily. His phone is on silent. Why did that happen?
VIP.
VIP. Let me put on airplane mode. I'll go back a bit if you want to edit into that.
That yeah. Totally worked. It was your dad calling.
Well, it was my dad, so it's kind of contextual. Yeah. Now in hindsight, at the time, I think it just made me incredibly anxious and incredibly insecure, so much so that I think it kicked in motion some mental health stuff that I'm still dealing with to this day. But also in hindsight, I'm kind of a bit pissed off about it, because I'm like, nobody ever said, oh, and she's a runner making tea at 5 o'clock in the morning for Piers Morgan. That part was never talked about, which I'm upset for my younger self that I maybe didn't speak up about that at the time.
So if we look at the word nepotism then, and the way that it was used to you, I mean, you were clearly a young adult then and you were going through your own kind of journey. Did that kind of put more pressure on you, just like negative energy? And then did you feel like you had to prove other people wrong then thereafter? It was like more battles than that were actually kind of needed.
Yeah, it was a lot of negative energy, really, really negative energy. And this is the thing, like, you know, you really do have to be thick-skinned, or you really have to do doggedly pursue your dream if you're going to wade through that negative energy. And if anything, you know, if I were to put a positive spin on it, it would be that it made me realize sooner rather than later that I wasn't cut out for TV. I wasn't cut out for celebrity. I didn't have a thick enough skin, and I did really care what people thought of me. You can't be like that and survive in an industry like that, especially in the UK with the UK tabloids. I mean, that's a whole other game in and of itself.
Well, I suppose one of your coping mechanisms then was literally get out of the industry to a certain degree. You obviously did do a lot of TV, but you do now kind of follow your life through fitness, as everyone knows, and it's wonderful. But do you find it difficult then to not define yourself by certain things, if that makes sense? As in, because it's very easy to say, I work in TV, therefore I define myself by getting this job, but then working in fitness in the same breath, you know, kind of, you can live and breathe your job 24/7 because you don't know when to switch off.
Yeah, it is fair to say I definitely used to be like that, and I'm getting a lot better at it now. But there definitely was a time when I was really, really lucky, actually, in that I... Give me 1 second.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm actually just going to turn my phone off. It's on airplane mode, and I'm still getting everything coming through. Because it's connected to my watch. Take my watch off. So I'm really incredibly lucky. Like, oh, right, sorry, where was I? What was I saying?
So about defining yourself through kind of your work, because, you know, learning to switch off and so forth.
So basically when I got qualified, I fell madly in love with really weightlifting. That's how it all started. My ex-boyfriend took me into a gym, and he was a bodybuilder, he was a personal trainer, and he kind of got me into lifting weights, and it was really quite immediate. I fell madly in love with it. And then I started to learn about, well, I started to watch him PT, and I got incredibly like jealous that he had this job that I wanted. And I suddenly realized that I had to quit my work in TV. I was working as a runner on, no, I was a senior researcher on Loose Women at the time. I realized that I finally found the thing that I wanted to do, and I had to move home, and I had to get qualified. And the first few years were brilliant. You know, I was falling like madly in love with this new skill and career and passion that I'd found at the age of 24. I'd found this thing that I was just mad about, and it kind of made it really, really easy to stay excited, to stay motivated, to go to the gym, to eat right, to blog about it, to, you know, to be the face of health and fitness in terms of my own career. And it did, I remember quite quickly, flip on its head when, you know, just like everything, as much as I love it and still love it now, all of a sudden it went from being my passion to very much being like my job. And it was a bit of a grind, and it was a bit of a slog. And it's really hard, actually, to be, especially as a woman, or especially for me, to be low body fat and quote unquote in shape year round. You know, you do want to go on holiday, and sometimes it is Christmas time, and there are, you know, you don't want to always be restricting yourself. And I definitely got into a really horrible cycle of feeling like I had to look a certain way, and I had to be a certain way to continue to work in my industry. And it only, I mean, only really in the last, I would say, 2 years have I realized that it's okay to not always have abs, and it's okay sometimes to go out and get drunk, and it's okay to have more real life balance. But it was a weird, I definitely went through a weird time with my job where it was kind of like a game of cat and mouse and chasing my tail.
So would you say that you have an important relationship between your fitness then and your mental health, side by side? How do you draw parallel with them both? And how do you use the other one to help the other?
Yeah, it can go either which way. Like, I think anything in life, you know. There were definitely, so initially it really helped me, weightlifting specifically, with my anxiety. There's something, you know, we always say people who suffer with anxiety that the holy grail is being present. It's actually being able to be in the moment. And that's what weightlifting really did for me. It sounds ridiculous, but, you know, when you've got your body weight on your back and you have to sit down and stand up again, it is dangerous. It forces you to be present. There's a huge rush of endorphins, exhilaration, also strength, both mental and physical strength that comes with it. You know, it really helped me kind of every day. Like, lifting really helped kind of ground me, I should say, really, into the moment, into being present. And also there was something about taking control of my body and pushing my body and seeing what my body could do that felt amazing. And the same thing with the diet. You know, as soon as I got control of my diet and I started learning about food, and I started, you know, understanding how to fuel my training and recover from my training, there was something hugely, there was a great liberation in control, really, is the best way for me to term it. It really felt like I got my shit together, and it felt amazing. And like I say, when it got to a point where it became a lot more about how I looked, and it did at one point, you know, I was on the Daily Mail online every day in my underwear. People were debating whether or not it was okay that I had muscle, which is hilarious. And I didn't care about that debate, but I did care about the fact that I was on the Daily Mail in my underwear every day. And all of a sudden it just became this thing. It all became about how I looked. And then it very swiftly went the other way. And like I say, it's only really now in recent times that I've come full circle. I'm like, that's not why I got into this. That's not why I fell in love with this. I'm fully qualified. I'm very good at my job. And it is not whether or not I have abs, but that was definitely a, that was definitely a really shitty time that I had to kind of go through and come out the other side of.
So with that relationship then with your own body and then those, the thought process and those anxieties coming into you, what were your techniques to help manage and deal with that? Because you must have hit a point where you were, you hit the self-realization point where you were like, okay, this is not healthy for me. What are my techniques now to help combat this?
So I do loads of things. First of all, I've been in and out of kind of doing CBT for, I mean, oh my gosh. I had my first panic attack when I was 21 on Dancing on Ice. And I realized then that I basically had this, I had some issues with anxiety that I wasn't dealing with. And I just kept thinking, it'll be fine. I can handle it. And it then obviously got to a point, panic attacks are scary. Like, I know anyone who's ever had one will know, like, it's really scary. And funnily enough, it's like the hours after that are even scarier, where you're like, oh my God, that actually happened. And you kind of hate yourself and you kind of feel really weak. And it was awful. So that's when I started going to therapy for it. And I remember my dad saying to me, like, there's nothing wrong with you. You have to ask somebody who knows how to help you, because nobody knows, you know, like, my dad didn't know, like, I didn't know, you know, my friends didn't understand. So that helped. Just, you know what, even just taking the step to go to somebody and say, this thing keeps happening and I feel awful every day. I feel sick every day. I don't know how much longer I can, like, do this. Just taking that step helped. And then having a professional be like, no, it's fine. I see, you know, thousands of people like you. You're not alone. It's really common. And like having somebody give me techniques to work through it. Like, you know, I don't know if you know about like dropping the anchor. Mm-hmm. One that really helped me. There's obviously breathing techniques, but I think everybody kind of connects with a different one. And anybody who's done CBT will know that typically you do like 8 sessions and then, you know, you're good for a period of time. And then I realized, I would say, after doing CBT maybe 2 or 3 times, that maybe I needed to have some kind of more long-term therapy as well, which is something I've been doing for a really long time. And I know that people, you know, a lot of the time, and again, you can probably hear, like, you can probably hear some of my issues and what I'm going to say. I think people will be like, oh, what do you have to be anxious about? Or like, oh, what, you know, I don't understand what, you know, what we all have stuff that's happened in our life or that is currently happening in our lives that we all struggle with. And I think it doesn't matter who you are or what those issues are. Even like I say, just taking the step to be like, I actually think I need somebody to help me with this. That in and of itself is going to be a huge comfort and a huge kind of ease for you.
What really upsets me is when people are too quick to judge, regardless of what professional industry or who you are, because it doesn't matter what you do. And obviously there's no way of measuring the form of anxiety. Every single human being is different. Emotions are processed differently and it can be triggered by anything, and any normal person can experience it. And also it is normal to experience it.
Yeah.
I think that's what's been important, to normalize the feeling of it, not to the point where it's just like, oh, now we don't care about it, but it's the point that to know that anyone can experience it, so you can make a difference now. You're allowed to talk about it. And it's that safe space now of being able to open up. Like you talk about it so openly now, and that's really important, because 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been allowed. Well, not allowed, but it would have been frowned upon, probably.
Yeah, and very much like, this is it. And this is, I think, you know, part of the problem that I had, part of why my anxiety did snowball, was because I felt like I wasn't allowed to have any issues. Like, you know, like I say, people go, oh, she's Rich and Judy's daughter, like, boo-hoo, cry me a river. And that just made it, exacerbated it, and it made it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when you feel like, I mean, you know, there's a lot of therapists who will say, and obviously every therapist has different techniques, but like the more you try and kind of hide a problem, the worse the problem will get. If you can bleed some light onto it, if, you know, there's something going on in the family with somebody's mental health or whatever it might be, standing up and actually not hiding that person, but saying, no, we have a problem, that in and of itself can actually breathe some life back into the situation and stop it from feeling so stagnant and gray and bleak. And I definitely always felt like I couldn't and I shouldn't say anything. And then, you know, even recently, do you remember, I read this the other day and I was like, if this is still even a problem, like Kendall Jenner came out and said that she was having like horrible panic attacks and like basically was just in absolute hell for ages. And there was so much backlash of like, oh, poor little model. And it's like, guys, like, you have no idea what's going on in her mind or in her day-to-day life. Like, you really don't know. And I'm not saying that she has, you know, real, you know, kind of real problems that, you know, the world, the no matter who you are, you can relate to. But it doesn't change the fact that she's going through some problems and she has to try and deal with them. And it's really interesting to me how people are so quick to judge.
So very quick to judge. And actually, someone like that is, I've always had the deepest amount of sympathy for anybody who's in the public eye, because I don't think people see it as this glorified lifestyle through social media, which is a single lens, easy to depict lifestyle as the most perfect scenario ever. But you don't see the 100 predators behind taking photos and following them to restaurants and whatever. Yeah. You know, I mean, I can't even dare to believe what they go through. So actually, like, and also it's incredibly isolating. Who can you trust? You know, immediately, you know, you can, there are so many conversations about this, and I think it's so easily forgotten about. And that's not to say that anyone with any normal individual is going through anything worse or easier. That's far, far from what I'm saying, but it's just, it's a different type of anxiety. Do you know what I mean?
It's a different type of hell. It's a different stage and setting and storyline, but make no mistake about it. I mean, my parents are really lucky in that the worst that they had to deal with was the tabloid media. Mm. And I'm really lucky in that I dipped my toe in and very quickly realized I wanted to get the hell out of there quickly, because it was absolutely, did it tear into my mental health, like I say, so much so that I still deal with it now. But then I think about the celebrities now, the really young celebrities who are not only dealing with the tabloid media and the media, which is horrific, because every time somebody writes something negative about you, you know that all your friends, your family, your boyfriend's friends, everybody's reading it. It's horrific. It's like being pointed at in the schoolyard and laughed at by everybody. It's your worst nightmare come to life. And not only are they dealing with that, but then social media and like all this pressure to uphold, even if they've made it themselves, an image that they created. Because like I said, when I was 18, I was such an attention whore, loved attention. I absolutely would have bought into that I'm perfect imagery on social media and had a great time doing it. And then what happens when you grow up and that's not who you are anymore, because now, you know, 10 years has gone by and that's not you anymore. But then you feel this pressure that you have to uphold this perfect image. I mean, I feel really, really bad for like the young mega celebrities of today, because you really have to be made of steel, I think, to come out of it unscathed.
Oh, completely. I mean, it's incredibly damaging. It's not normal. What we have created is not normal. This idea of like a superpower celebrity, basically.
Agreed.
I mean, with you and your line of work, though, it'd be interesting to talk about social media with you, because obviously you have to utilize it to an extent for your clients and maintaining a professional presence. Now I'd probably put it for you, because you can use it as a tool, which is really important. But where do you draw the line then on what you are happy to show of your real life now, and where you kind of, you know, where's that line for you from professional to personal?
Oh, it's really interesting. I'll be honest, I really don't like social media. I see it as part of my job. I see it as something that I have to do. I look at my competitors, both people that I really admire and look up to, and people who I really don't think should be as respected as they are in my industry for various reasons, which I won't go into.
Yes.
All of my competitors. And I'm like, shit, it really feels like a Mario Kart race that you have to be posting every day. You have to be doing the questions. I actually quite like the questions, because I really do like coaching and that's a bit of fun. But you have to be doing it, you know, whether or not you have time that day or not, it doesn't matter. You have to put out informative content and you have to put out physique content, because obviously I work in the physique world. And I really dislike it, but I see it as part of my job. So I sack up and I get on with it. But like I say, when I first started on Instagram, I loved it. Like, people forget we all change, right? Like, I loved it. And it definitely helped me build a career, 100%. And it is definitely now, it definitely feels like a job. It doesn't feel like fun anymore. But hey, you know, we don't all love every aspect of work. You've got to suck it up and get it done. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure. And also there's only so much to say. I really get stuck sometimes. I'm like, what the hell am I going to post now? I've talked about calories. I've talked about protein. I've talked about training. I've talked about rest days. I've talked about female body image. I'm like, I don't know. Sometimes it's just like you get writer's block and I just look at it. I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, completely. How do you tackle then like trolls on social media? Or are you kind of strong enough to not even look?
I'm really good now. When I was very much like Rich and Judy's daughter, like trying to work in TV and stuff, that kind of stuff absolutely annihilated me. Like the comment section of the Daily Mail online annihilated me. Every time I made a mistake and the press wrote about it, which was often, it annihilated me. It really tore into me and made me quite an unhappy little sausage. Now, because I genuinely do love my job, I love my clients, I feel very lucky that I'm a competitive professional in my industry. As in, you know, like I say, we all know who we are, and I'm definitely, you know, up there. And I feel incredibly lucky, fulfilled, grateful, incredibly grateful that, you know, so many women trust me. And so it really, now the trolling is like water off a duck's back, because I feel like I'm whole, I'm fulfilled, I'm good. Like, I'm good, I'm fine. And I've gone through it with my own body, and I've come out the other side of it. And it doesn't mean anything to me anymore, but that's because my sense of purpose now is very, very strong. When, you know, anybody who doesn't have that, who maybe is in the wrong, doing the wrong thing, it's horrible. The click, I do the click too.
Thank you. So it sounds like that to be able to preach to the choir, which you now do to an extent, but from a professional kind of basis, is you have to have gone through it and experienced it yourself, because otherwise you're just talking like in a hollow way. Do you know what I mean? You have to have had that experience to kind of understand, right, I know a bit of what you're going through, a bit of what you're going through. Let me combine my experiences with what you're going through and help you in a little way.
Yeah,
it's really, really important.
It is really important. And I find it really interesting now. So I would never write like a self-help book, or I don't know, any kind of mental health. I would never really put myself on that platform, because I don't really have any qualifications. Now I can speak to my clients about, you know, the stuff I went through with my body, how hard I found it to sustain the kind of the physique that I was trying so hard to hold on to, and I was miserable. What it really takes, what it feels like as a woman when you get that low body fat, what it feels like when you feel like you're beholden to the gym. I've gone through it and I've come out the other side of it, and I have a really good relationship with my body, training and food now. And I like the fact that I can help them on that platform. But there are a lot of people in my industry, specifically men, who are really touting around their self-help books and their mental health, you know, approaches, who I just have, they have no qualifications for it. And I find it quite terrifying. Like, absolutely talk about your experiences and hope that people relate and hope that it'll help. But to release a self-help book is like a 29-year-old man who, you know, I mean, I'm like, that nothing's really happened. You became a PT and you got a good following. Like, I don't like, and I know I'm not invalidating any life experiences that these people might have, but I'm like, surely.
But it's to commercialize that and try and profiteer off the back of something purely because you have a social media following.
Yes, I find it deeply irresponsible and really scary, and it's really prevalent in my industry at the moment. So like I say, like, talk about it, be honest about it. Don't ever feel invalidated by your experiences. But I don't think that that makes you, you know, that means you can do a webinars on mental health. Which
you took the words out of my mouth in the fact that I thrive off hearing other people's experiences as well, because parts of it I'll relate to and parts of it I'll be like, well, let me tell you what I went through and see if that can help you.
Yeah.
Talking about it is helpful, but it's when you start going, this is what I would do. Hey, I'm 25. I've got nothing going on in my life that could help you professionally.
But you, I mean, you look at this podcast and you look at the wealth, the backlog that you will have behind you. I mean, even now, but even in 5 years from now, there's no reason why actually you wouldn't be able to turn around and be like, no, actually I have enough, like I've heard enough stories and I have enough under my belt that actually I can say like, these are some of the stories that I think that everyone else will find really helpful. And this is what I could relate to. And that's one thing, but yeah, it's quite scary. I'm seeing like this kind of Tim Robbins effect just like popping up everywhere. And I'm like, wow, this is so unethical.
See, that's what I'm doing here, is all I am doing on this podcast is never ever preaching, but purely documenting in an audio form other people's experiences. If someone else hears an experience that is similar or even somewhat slightly relatable, they'll go, okay, first of all, I'm not alone. And that is the first thing that will immediately put you at ease. And the second is, hang on, if they're happy to talk about it, why the hell can't I now?
Yes,
and maybe then this is an opportunity to kind of progress something. And if it just sparks one conversation for somebody, it's great. So that's the beneficial thing for me. But something I definitely want to talk about in terms of the media, and I do not want to get you in trouble, and I don't want to put your foot in it, but it's certainly how the media has dealt with Harry and Meghan, and the way that I would say that they have behaved in such a way. How would you feel about this situation?
It's so complicated in terms of, I feel that being born into the royal family must be I mean, you don't have a choice. You're there. Like that your life is done. Like you, and you know how I've been talking about, like, you know, we change, and, you know, 1 minute maybe we are of one kind of personality type, or we have certain characteristics, and then as we grow and we age, they change, and you know, life is transitory, and your character and your character traits are transitory, and experience changes you. And I feel incredibly bad, really, that the way the media treated Harry and Meghan. I thought it was incredibly insensitive. I thought it was incredibly bullish. And it made me very uncomfortable just to sit on the outside and look at it. I mean, I hated every headline I read for no other reason than it was just out and out bullying on a mass scale. And it made me incredibly uncomfortable. And I'm not remotely surprised that it ended the way that it did. And I think, you know what, if people need to do make decisions that they need to make for their own mental health and for the betterment of their family's future, then more power to them. You make that decision, protect yourself, protect your family, and do what you've got to do. And I'm not surprised. And, you know, if it amazes me as well that the media didn't learn anything from it. They still turned around and they made another kind of pantomime out of it, you know, of which they were the responsible ones and everybody else was, you know, the villain or, you know, the good guy, the good cop, bad cop. And I was just like, you do realize, guys, that this happened because of you. No, but we won't talk about that. Like, don't put that as the headline. We fucked up. We shouldn't have treated you so badly. Don't do that. No. Instead, just carry on. And the really scary thing is that I think so many people didn't see it and still don't see it. You look at, like, the Daily Mail Online, which I think is the most read online publication in the world, I think.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it is. And the rate at which their stories are coming out, the amount of typos, grammatical errors, wrong names, wrong ages, wrong careers, wrong. None of this is being checked. Nothing's being checked. And also, I would just like to remind people that freedom of speech does not mean any and all speech. Freedom of speech is actually a luxury that exempts hate speech, right? And a lot of the stuff that I read absolutely would fall under hate speech. And it's really interesting that people now are like, no, freedom of speech. Like, do you even know what freedom of, do you even know kind of what the rules of that are? Because a lot of the time it's not falling into kind of the British media's headlines. It's just not.
Yeah. Physical and mental well-being are so important and come hand in hand. I'm incredibly proud to be sponsored by the CBD brand, The Good Level, who have well-being at the very forefront of what they do as a company and a brand. They offer CBD oils, balms, and jellies, all of which are full spectrum and extracted by a cold press. Their oils are all made with extra virgin olive oil from Kalamata, and that makes them so much tastier than any other that I've tried before. Their balms have a fantastic smell as well, and are great to use on your skin or any pain you're experiencing. And of course, their jellies taste so great for any sweet tooths. They also have a commitment to sustainability, pledging to plant at least 500 trees every year, along with ensuring all their packaging is recyclable. So if you want to check The Good Level out, go to their Instagram page at the.good.level, where you can find out all about their products. And if you'd like a discount, feel free to use HEADSTRONG15 at checkout on their website.
Now, let's briefly put social media aside, because I feel like we're well versed in that now, well covered. What I want to ask you is, just to carry on the slight mental health side of things, is there anything that you do kind of daily, indeed with James as well, to check in with each other or check in with yourself?
No, you know what? James and I are not that well suited in this regard.
So, oh, really?
James is very much a product of his environment. You know, he went to an all-boys boarding school. He went to two all-boys boarding school. And then he literally left school and went straight into professional rugby. And he absolutely kind of has the approach of, like, compartmentalize, get it done. He's an athlete as well. Like, don't forget, he's a professional athlete. So he doesn't get, like, bogged down in emotions or even, like, excitement or regret. He's like always like in the moment. Now, I am obviously, in case you haven't already guessed from listening to this, I obviously am not like that. Like, I am somebody who suffers from anxiety. I am somebody who, I have moments where I actually get really bad social anxiety. There are times where I actually find it really hard even just to, like, reply to a WhatsApp message. It's so interesting. the thing is that I've just learned, and my best friend is a therapist. She's a very, very brilliant therapist. And I think early days in my relationship with James, she said to me, Chloe, you're never going to have a relationship where that person is going to be everything to you. She was like, so if you can't talk to James about, you know, your emotions or the things that you're insecure about or the things that are kind of making you feel anxious because you end up having an argument about it, she was like, that's fine. Talk to somebody else. You don't have to always go to one person for one thing. So in all honesty, I don't typically speak to James if I'm going through a hard time. I'll speak to one of my friends or sometimes usually my dad as well. My dad's very good with it. But I do make sure that I check in with James because obviously he retired. He retired, what was it, in 2 years ago now, I think exactly 2 years ago as of June. And it was a real kind of point for me to make sure that I consistently asked him, like, how are you doing okay? That I watched and monitored him. And he definitely had moments where I think both his internal and external kind of monologues were definitely not great, but I would say he's in a really good place now. He's writing his second book. He's got two podcasts that are always charting in the top 10. He records both of them on a weekly basis. He's going out to cover the Lions tour for TalkSport. So his life has started to pick up steam again and he has purpose outside of rugby. So he's absolutely fine now, but there were definitely times in the beginning where I was really worried about his retirement. And I think that that's just something that all athletes have to go through.
I think, as you say, it's very natural because it's a change of lifestyle after 10, 12, 15 years of everything that you know, and then immediately you're coming to a halt and you're not going training three times a week. You're not seeing 30 people a day at the ground, whatever. It's so different.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And so did you feel like you were playing, like you had like a duty within you? Do you know what I mean? Where you just felt like, obviously that's like an amorous connection as well. Obviously you love your partner, but do you know what I mean? There was like that dutiful aspect where you just like, I actually need to support you. Even if you say you don't need it.
Yes.
I'm still going to be there.
Yeah. I felt like one of the things that I think he found so tough, and every sportsman who retires is different, but I think for James, one of the things that he found so tough was that he wasn't going into training with 30 guys every day, laughing, being boys. All of a sudden, he was self-employed, so he was at home with me. And we still live because then COVID hit, which is a whole other thing. But we still live kind of in the middle of nowhere because of his last rugby gig. And all of our friends are in London. And it was like, oh God. And so I really felt like I had to make sure I felt like I had to make sure that I was there as like a sounding board and to lend an ear, even if it was just to have like stupid banter that I don't find particularly funny, but I wanted to help him. I wanted to help him like get through it in a way. And it took time because obviously think about the practicalities of his life. He was training, Monday through Friday, the work week. And then he was playing a game on a Saturday. And then he had to go into the club for recovery, like physio and all that stuff and checkups on a Sunday. So he didn't have a social life really when he retired. We really had to like start him from scratch. He was in his mid-30s and it was like, okay, here we go. And then it was quite hard as well being his partner. And all of a sudden, you know, he was going on, you know, boys' weekends. Don't get me wrong. Like he was still the rugby trips away. And sometimes on the Lions tour, for example, he was gone for like two and a half months. But it was hard because now it's different. He's out like with the boys and our schedules completely changed. You know, I work from home, he was home all the time, and then COVID hit. I mean, it was a real corker of a first year of marriage, I'll tell you that for free.
Yeah.
But God damn, we got through it.
Because the way that the media portrays and the way that you guys document yourselves is in an amazing kind of bubbly atmosphere. And that's the way that it's very much seen. I'm curious to know if behind the closed doors, there's that kind of tender side where it is, you know, obviously I know that there is, but I'm just curious to know to what capacity where you can just kind of chill. You talked about your kind of like, you'll do the banter, just, you know, even if it's not funny, you'll just play along to play the part. But when is there that time for you guys to just chill?
Yeah, we're good. I'm really domestic. I really love cooking. I think also because of the anxiety stuff,
cooking does it for me.
Yeah. It's anything methodical, which takes a while and it's a process you have to follow. And then you get this lovely end result. I think all anxious people really like that. And I think,
love it.
It's like cooking, training, but both of them really, when you think about it, you're going through the paces to get to the end and do something wonderful. And so I love cooking, you know, same with just like, I like, you know, keeping the house clean, flowers and candles. I'm very much a homebody and I'm very much like a classic 50s wife. I know that I run a business and everything, but I work from home and I like it like that. You know, I love walking the dog. So it's actually really nice to me to have somebody to take care of. And I know that that's a really outdated notion of marriage, but it suits me. It fits well with me to take care of my husband, to cook for him, to make sure he's okay. Like I very much like being at home with him. And yeah, I love our time home together. I think since his retirement, James has become less of a homebody and definitely more of a party boy. So he's definitely like got his times where he'll go off and do that. And sometimes I'll join in, sometimes I'm not really as into it as he is. Sometimes I'll join in and, you know, have like a boozy weekend, and sometimes I'll just stay at home with the dog. And we've finally gotten into a really nice rhythm, but make no mistake about it. And I think, you know, like I say, marriages is, you know, everything, the scene's always changing and you have to change with it. You know, we definitely had to work to get to kind of a new kind of homeostasis of our marriage. And it was a real fuck of a year after he retired and then COVID hit. It was really, really difficult. But any couple who had to do lockdown 1, 2, and 3 together will know that, you know, you either adapt and you get on with it or you're done. So we just adapted.
It's been, as you say, it's been like one of the biggest tests. And you've spoken about it very well, in the sense that if you can get through that, then I mean, life gets a lot easier when things are opening up.
Yeah, it does. Life, like, now we can actually, I mean, I'm really annoyed with my parents. As soon as lockdown was lifted, they like went off to Cornwall, and I'm like, I would quite like to see you all. And like, it's really interesting now, I think, that I'm starting to see friends and family again. That kind of, yeah, that sense of kind of balance in my relationship is coming back, which is much needed.
So speaking of the word balance in the kind of relationship area and sphere, just scenario, for example, let's say that there's been a few heavy weekends and you were like, right, I do just want to chill. Would you be able to pull the card and say, James, can you stay in for a weekend, please?
I would, and he would, but I would never ask that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, this is the thing. One thing that's really good about my marriage is that if I said to James, please don't go, or please don't whatever, put whatever label on it you want, I know that he wouldn't. But I think he's quite safe in the knowledge that I would never ask that of him. So instead,
why is that, out of interest? Like, because it's good to hear like what you deem a healthy relationship.
I would absolutely. Do you know what it is? It's put the shoe on the other foot. That's what I always. If he told me not to go and do something, I'd be really pissed off about it. I'd be like, what the heck? Like, no, you can't do that. In my opinion, every relationship is different. So I totally understand that. In my opinion, I personally don't think that a relationship will survive if you're dictating what somebody can and can't do. But that doesn't mean that you have free reign to do whatever the fuck you want, whenever.
That doesn't mean you don't listen either.
Exactly. There has to be like some respect here. So I would never ask him not to go. But then what James and what I have said to him, and we have had this conversation more than once, and now it's very much in motion. Again, sometimes you have to force something into motion. Is I'm like, all right, cool. If you want to go out like 2 weekends on the trot with your mates and have like a boozy weekend, fine. But be aware that at some point in this like 3-week bracket, I want you to take me on a really nice date night. It's that simple. Like, we need time together as well. And also, you need to feel like your partner wants to spend time with you. Like,
yeah. Well, otherwise, what's the point? I'm literally not your carer.
Yes, exactly. So he understands that now. He's very good at that. We have certain spots like in London and also around where we are in Northampton that he knows I love. And he will, yeah, he'll know. He knows if he's had a couple of big nights out and a week or so has gone by, he will be taking me out. And I know he will. And that's it. Again, like, these are patterns and habits that you have to kind of create and force into motion. And sometimes that's the really tricky part of a relationship. But yeah, like you said, you just have to listen and take it on board and hope to, you know, kind of change and grow together.
And it also sounds like there's now an unspoken language with it. It's like you've got the routine of it now. Not to say that that's what always happens. It's like 2 big ones and then take me for dinner. It's not like, yeah, it's like this permanent thing, but you know, there's this kind of easy kind of equilibrium of what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. It's not like a, you know, and every third day this has that, and every second week. No, it's not like that. It's just like,
you just know, understanding. Yeah, if you know the other person, that's what being with somebody is. If you know the other person, it just should go without saying.
Exactly. But I want people to understand, because I think You know, I don't actually really post that much about James and I anymore because I think we did couples quarantine in the first lockdown. I didn't like it. I felt like it was too close to, I just didn't like it at all. I didn't want to put it all out. And that show would only work if we put it all out on the table. And I did it and it was, and I went along with it. And when it came to talking about second season, I was like, I actually just didn't like being that honest. Like in front of a microphone, like about my marriage. I'm happy to be honest about myself, but also when you never know, like what, like the sun might pick up on, and the papers did start writing about it. And that was it for me. I was like, no, I'm out.
Yeah. It's difficult as well when a quote is lifted for, you know, completely out of context.
Yes.
You can't justify the meaning of it in a kind of a column of 80 words. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. There's no context in written in, well, in the press. But a podcast is lovely because it's all there.
Exactly. Now, something else that I wanted to talk about in terms of a relationship, which is really important and something that you have talked about very well, is completely removing the idea of jealousy.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about your techniques, or indeed just your mental approach to just say, right, this is now the present and you move forward. It's almost as similar to the James's mentality, I suppose, of being a sportsman. You are always in the moment. Yeah. You know, you don't dwell on the past, but you also don't look too ahead in the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look, it's a really normal thing, like, to be a jealous partner. And I'm certainly more jealous than James. James literally could not give two shits. Like, he's just so, I think, secure in like my commitment to him and my love for him, that I really don't think that, like, I could do anything short of him walking in on me having sex with someone. I don't think that I could do anything where he'd be like, oh, I'm really jealous. Like, I think he's just like, no, I'm good. You're good. We're sweet. But it's definitely something that I've had to work on. And, you know, I come from a long line of relationships where I was cheated on, which, look, you're young, like, no judgment, no drama, like, it's what happens in young relationships, but it definitely leaves you with baggage going into the next relationship,
for sure.
I think it was the first rugby tournament James went on. I can't remember where he was or what he was doing, but it was definitely the first year that we were together. And the first night that he wasn't out, I was like wide awake, like, also because, like, I'm with a sportsman, okay, I'm not stupid. I knew what I was getting into when I started dating him, and I was warned against it by all the men I knew. They were like, definitely don't go out with a sportsman. So I was like lying there in bed, wide awake, just staring at the ceiling, like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I just don't know if I can do this. And then woke up the next day, spoke to him, was like really arsy with him, even though he'd done absolutely nothing wrong. Obviously, like, had a bit of a fight, which totally was my fault, like, projecting, didn't need to happen. And then I put the phone on, and I was so sad because he was away and he was going to be away for the next few months. And I remember thinking, like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm going to ruin my own relationship for what? Like, because I'm like fearful, like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'll have a word when there's something to have a word about. And also I would quite like to sleep. Like, sleep's quite important to me. So I was like, fuck, I have to deal with this. I have to deal with it now. And it was really funny. It was just like, I think it was a conclusion, which obviously had been hovering for a while, but the penny just dropped and that was the right time. And I don't think I've laid there awake at night panicking since.
And what will be as well, because if you're just having these overthinking thoughts, like, you're literally achieving nothing apart from self kind of neglect almost, you know, you're winding yourself up into oblivion. So it's almost, it is pointless. The overthinking generally is, obviously, I don't mean that in any lighthearted way. I know that it's very difficult for some people to not do it, but you know what I mean? It's just like, you're not getting anything out of it.
Well, this is the thing, you're suffering the consequences without the action having occurred first.
Correct.
So what's the point? Like, what is self-torture? Like,
yeah. And if it happens, then get arsy. Yeah. Then
you can
then you let the penny drop.
Stop throwing stuff.
Yeah, you're done. Yeah. That's cool. I don't mind what happens then because you've got the cards. Yeah. I mean, we talked about there briefly as well, the lockdown and how, you know, if you can get through that, you can get through anything. And I know for a fact that there must have been a time in your lockdown where you're probably thinking, kids might be on the way. But instead, you got a dog. Happy days. Now, you are now a dog lover. I mean, you weren't, but you are now.
I'm obsessed with my dog. It's awful. Like, I finally understand what people say. So when I used to say to people, like, having a kid, be honest with me, because it looks like hell. It looks like absolute hell. Like, be honest. Do you really regret it? Do you really wish you hadn't done it? Or is it the best thing you ever did? And everyone's like, it's both. And always in both a macro and a micro sense, in that it's the best thing you've ever done and you've never loved something so much in your life, But there is an element of like, whew, this is hard work. And then in a micro sense where you pendulum swing between like, I fucking really regret doing this. And then like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And I was always like, A, I don't understand how those two things can coexist. Like, I just don't get it. And B, like, that still sounds like hell. Like, sounds like you're in limbo hell. So I was like, I don't really get it. And then I got a dog and now I get it. And it is...
Oh my God, it literally, to a T.
Like, the best thing I've ever done. And there are days where I like just want to kill him. I'm like, I will kill you. Like, when he doesn't come back, like, recall, when he's better now. He went through a period where he was really bad at recall.
Oh my days, like, that photo of James. Oh, yeah. That is the classic.
That was in the thick of it. That was in the real thick of him being little shit. And he knows. He knows. Because he was recalling.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went through a period where he just decided no. And that's what's so maddening. You're like, you're deliberately defying me. Like, how dare you? You're a dog. But I'm obsessed with him. Like, every morning, it's the best morning ever. I don't know what it is. Like, it's mornings with him that I feel like it's our time. And it's the best feeling in the world.
Oh, I so agree. There's just so many. Like, right now, Hamilton is sleeping next to me. And I'm just thinking right now, why are you being so good? But this morning, you wouldn't let me put my socks on.
Yeah,
it's like, come on. I had to spend 5 minutes putting my socks on. Also, separation anxiety because of COVID. He has to come into the bathroom with me. It's like, come on.
Bertie does it too. It's so funny how he'll try and get into the shower while I'm in there.
So yes, the shower.
Yeah. But then if I try to get him into the shower, he's like bolting. I'm like, stay here. But you're lucky. Like, how big is Hamilton?
Hamilton is here.
Oh my God, see, you can definitely manhandle that.
Yeah.
He's so gorgeous.
I know, but it's because he's not charging around like a Cocker Spaniel right now.
He's absolutely gorgeous. But then Bertie is huge.
He's a unit.
He's huge, and I can't manhandle him. Like, if he wants to go, he's off. I'm like, no.
Well, that's the thing with big dogs, because I've always seen myself as a big dog person, but you have to have control.
Oh, yeah.
Like, on the any lead control. Like, I saw someone down here and, like, on the street walking this massive Great Dane, and it was like a 70-year-old woman. And I'm like, you are crazy.
But I think Great Danes, although actually, I don't know this for sure. The Great Danes that I've met are very chill.
Oh, no, yeah. They are, like, they've got a lovely temperament, but I just think, like, that one single moment.
What could go wrong? But I think we said this before we started recording. I think temperament is key. I think Spaniels and Labradors have a very similar temperament. I think they're a little bit extra. Bertie tries to make best friends with everyone and everything all the time. And like, people like don't, dogs hate it, a lot of dogs. Yeah. And a lot of people hate it. And it's like, I have to shout all like every day when I walk him, like, he's friendly. Because people, he like literally wants to be best friends.
Charges in. All right. So Chloe, what is to come for the rest of the year for you then? He's opening up. Carrying on with your online clients, anything else in the works?
Well, okay, so we're on series 4 of my podcast, The Podcast, which is doing really well. It's charting, which makes me very happy.
Yeah.
My online business, I have two. I've got my own coaching platform and then a much bigger one that I do with my business partner, Emma, and both of them are growing with every round. We've got 800 clients now on the EC method, which is huge. Yeah, it's massive. We're probably going to have to start getting some help at some point. But that makes me happy because it means that we're doing a really good job.
Exactly.
Just from word of mouth, every round we've grown by, well, we started off with 100 clients and now we're on 800 and it's only been a year. So we're growing. And I love my job. I feel very lucky. I will be doing a fifth book, but what that book is very much to be confirmed because I don't know. It's like I was saying about getting writer's block. I'm like, I don't know what else I can possibly
It's on
write.
A need-to-know basis, and I do not need to know.
Yeah, and I'm so scared. I've got a meeting with them in a few weeks. I'm so scared that they're going to be like, what about a self-help book? And I'm going to have to be like, no.
Listen to Headstrong.
I'm not doing it. I'll be like, listen to Headstrong. I had this rant. That's really, I think, what the next big decision will be. And it's exciting.
Okay, so my final question that I ask every single guest that comes on the podcast, what does the word headstrong mean to you?
Headstrong means to me that you back yourself. And I think that's actually a piece of advice that James, like I say, we're not super well suited, is athlete and, you know, anxious mess. but that's a piece of advice he gave me that has served me very well. Back yourself. If you know that what you're doing is coming from an authentic place, and I know I hate that word as well because it's so woke, but if it comes from an authentic place, like your heart, your soul, this is a decision that feels right to you, and it doesn't matter if it's professional or personal, there are probably going to be hurdles at some point. Back yourself. And if you know that something is right and your morals and your ethics are in the right place, then no matter what you're coming up against, back yourself. And that's what headstrong means to me. It means back yourself. I wouldn't be able to manage my anxiety on a day-to-day basis if I wasn't authentic on social media and on podcasts like this. It would blow up. I can't lie. I can't do the whole play a role thing, which I actually think doesn't serve me that well, because sometimes you have to play a role. But if I did that, my anxiety would be out of control. So I think being authentic for me is a huge, huge part of being headstrong.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks. Had a really good, really good chat. It's been great.
I loved it. Thank you.
There we go.
It's great to have teamed up with The Good Level, a British CBD company who share a similar ethos to that of Headstrong. The Good Level co-founders, Joe and Johnny, believe in CBD as it's helped them and their families with their physical and mental well-being. Whether that's using their balms to recover from physical exercise, or using their oils to manage stress and anxiety, or to get a better night's sleep, The Good Level has well-being at the very centre of their brand. As we've partnered up with them for this season, you can get a 15% discount off all their orders using HEADSTRONG15 at checkout. And if you're not sure about CBD yet, no worries. Joe and Johnny are always happy to chat and answer all your questions. You can contact them via their website or check out their Instagram at the.good.level. And that's HEADSTRONG15 at checkout. And that's it for this episode of Headstrong. A huge, huge thank you to Chloe for joining me on the podcast. And hopefully we'll be able to get James Haskell on the podcast next series. Fingers crossed for that. And if you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to tag James in any Headstrong posts and we'll try and get him on. That's it for this episode then. So thank you so much to you for tuning in. Please, if you did enjoy it, like, subscribe, go follow us on Instagram, Twitter, wherever. It would be great to have your support all over the place, and do share it with any family and friends. Join us next week for our series finale.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.